Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast, brought to you by City Current and powered by Lipscomb and Pitts Insurance. This show shares personal stories and insight from those who are giving back and making a difference so we can learn and do the same. We cover life lessons, business advice, passion, and purpose. Now here's our host, Jeremy Park.
Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Park. We're in for a treat. We get to get edumacated. So a lot focused on education, doing amazing things. We talk about innovation, education, tied together, leadership, student development, all the way across the board. We're here with somebody who's doing phenomenal work, not only at the University of Memphis, but really laying the groundwork for others all around the nation. So we're here with a good friend of ours, Dr. Justin Lawhead. He is the Dean of Students with the University of Memphis. How are you doing, Justin?
Great. Great to be here, Jeremy.
So it's been fun watching your career. I've known you for a long time. I've been working on the LEAD board, and we'll talk about what that means, but for a long time with you. And so to watch your career trajectory has been phenomenal. To watch you and your growth and just, you know, the amount of good you've been doing has been phenomenal. But let's start with a little bit of history. Let's go to the Pittsburgh area, Pennsylvania. So let's start with just where you grew up and a little bit about your childhood.
Sure. I'm from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, which is an hour and a half east of Pittsburgh. Grew up there my entire life. Johnstown is a struggling community. It was a former steel town, and then the steel industry bottomed out in the late 70s. And so every time I go back, it's a little poorer, and it's a little bit more in poverty. And so I learned a lot from those experiences about what you can do perseverance-wise. But I grew up, my parents got divorced when I was about 7 or 8, was really attached to my mother and the work that she did in the community. She worked in the welfare industry, in the welfare social work, and then eventually worked for Children and Youth Services in the state of Pennsylvania. I graduated high school, wanted to get out of the little city, and went to the closest big city, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and undergraduate and grad, University of Pittsburgh. And then my higher education career has taken me all around. And so in higher education, you have to move around to move up. So my first job was outside Philadelphia, Delaware Valley College. I spent 2 years there, student activities, programming work, really ground level work for a student affairs professional. Then spent six years at the Beach, University of North Carolina at Wilmington,
nice.
94 to 2000. But then hit a point where I couldn't get promoted anymore and looked for a new opportunity at Kent State University. Yes, I moved from the Beach to Northeast Ohio, and many people questioned my judgment when I did that.
Well, but it's for a career move, so those are things you have to do.
Yeah, it was an opportunity. And then in 2003, saw the opportunity for the University of Memphis for the Associate Dean of Students to oversee an entire student life department. Was hired in August 2003 and did that work till last summer, and then got promoted to the Dean of Students.
So let's go back to you in Pittsburgh or in that area.
Sure.
And in Pennsylvania. But talk about, did you always want to go in education? I mean, obviously, seeing your mom is working in the social work area.
Sure.
I've got to believe that formed a lot of this kind of the community service aspect, which obviously you're heavily involved with now.
Mm-hmm.
But did you always want to go in education?
No, when when you were a teenager in the 80s and there wasn't much industry and the economy struggled, you were instructed to either be an engineer or a lawyer. And I thought, well, heck, my name's Justin Lawhead. I'll get a law degree. I'll put my name in the yellow pages and I'm golden, right? But I got to my junior year and a couple things happened. First of all, I started to get involved. I ran for the Student Government Board at the University of Pittsburgh, and that was a much different structure than other institutions. So, you know, the University of Pittsburgh has almost 40,000 students, and they only have an 8-member Student Government Board. It's just the structure they've had since the history of that institution. And I won, and it was a surprise to the students, and frankly, it was a surprise to me. And then I began to get involved with student affairs professionals and their work. And I thought about going to law school, but I became a building manager of the student union. I served on the judicial board. And finally, I had a conversation with the director of student activities. And he said, you know, you can do this full time. And, you know, there's a lot more exposure to student affairs now. Back then, you just thought it was faculty that meandered into that work somehow. But there were programs to do that. So spoke to him about it, went to a conference, and went to graduate school at the University of Pittsburgh and started my career from there.
What do you think, you know, coming from a family where, you know, divorced, but obviously, you know, with your mother being the main influence on that side, what's a lesson that you take away from just that experience, but also too, just, you know, some of her insight?
Well, my mother, she was actually in town this weekend. She wanted to go see the blues down at the Bill Street Music Festival. I spent Sunday in the blues town with my mom. My mom always cared about people. It was just her nature. She always had an interesting diversity of friends across the city and across professions. And, you know, the welfare industry, oh, I keep calling it industry, welfare work is challenging because many times you see those people over and over again and then not moving on from the circumstances they have. And so I saw her interest in helping people move beyond where they were. And then she moved into the children and youth work that really deals with difficult situations with children, whether it's abuse or neglect. And again, it was just that focus on caring for the individual that I always took away from my mother, that she wasn't in education, but she was in supporting individuals and individuals' growth and development. And I eventually just realized, based on her influence, that's where I wanted to go.
What's something, you know, spending time with your mother recently, it's interesting because growing up, you hear so many that, you know, whether it's a tradition or whatever, but you kind of take that time for granted. And then all of a sudden, right, as you get older, that time becomes very precious.
Sure.
So what's something special just recently that you either realized, or I'm just curious, like describe kind of that recent interaction with your mom in terms of just what you're feeling now versus maybe 10, 20 years ago.
Sure. I mean, I think anybody has evolving relationships with parents, right? And so there are teenagers where you always feel that you're right, and then college when you feel like you're invincible, and then you're starting your own family, and you kind of migrate or develop through those experiences. I mean, quite frankly, the epiphany that I had when my mother came down for this weekend, because my mother was supposed to come last year for my daughter's graduation, but she had some knee and hip problems and she had to cancel, and so she came back here to just spend that ticket and spend some time here. And I think, frankly, my mom's a close friend. I mean, there we were, jamming at the blues tent, really comfortable around each other. And, you know, I think a lot of people have close relationships with the parents, but a lot of people don't. And just not taking that for granted and realizing that your mother's there for you to support you, and you can hang out and drink beer and watch the blues, too.
Yeah, so, very cool.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and fast forward to you at the University of Memphis, because, like I said, I came to know you and work with you through the LEAD program,
sure,
which is a leadership program that covers all spectrums of the university. And so it's freshmen all the way through seniors, not just business students, but those that are in art and history and all the above. And it's a smorgasbord, if you will, of leadership opportunities where you have conferences and professional development and professional connection lunches where you bring business leaders together with students. So there's a lot to this. But you really, I give you a lot of credit because you came up with so many of these opportunities, mm-hmm, to engage students and to grow that program tremendously.
Right.
And now, obviously, you're in a different role in terms of even higher up with the university. But describe coming in and working with leadership as,
sure,
it relates to these students.
Well, quite honestly, when I first got to the institution, a lot of my work was in student activities background. So I had a pretty extended career with programming, concerts, comedians, and then when I went to Kent State, my work was with fraternity and sorority life, multicultural programs, and commuter student programs and orientation. So quite honestly, the dip into leadership happened at the University of Memphis. So part of what was appealing to that job, and I think as you move and develop through your career, is what are these things that you don't know that you can learn through a new opportunity? So when I got to the institution, they only had one leadership program. They had an emerging leadership scholarship program that had been in place since 1983. And they accepted 25 students every year and then had a curriculum that they required those students to participate in. When I first got to the institution, and based on the resources that I had with colleagues working at other colleges and universities, I found that our curriculum wasn't really solid. It wasn't providing learning experiences that graduated one on top of the other, meaning that what you learn your freshman year should be different than your sophomore, junior, and senior year. And so the first thing I did with that curriculum was really look back at leadership theory, things that were available to higher education, and refine that curriculum. And then the second or third year, I was really challenged to look at the institution as a whole and say that we were only providing leadership training to 50 scholarship students a year. And so the institution really needed to rethink that, because we were beginning to have dialogues with partners and corporations and businesses about, we want these students to graduate with what they know about a specific business or nonprofit or education, but they need to come ready to work. They need to understand what the workplace is like, and you can really get that through leadership experiences. So a lot of the programs that you've been involved with since we met was the evolution of not only developing programs for students that weren't on scholarship, but also developing a menu of programs that had a diversity of learning experiences that then students could take within the organizations or work that they were doing at the institution, but they also could take it to whatever their future employment was.
So that way, literally every student has access to these sure. opportunities, whether they're, you know, kind of a one-time, like a conference, or whether they're over, you know, a course of time, like some of the different series events. But mm-hmm. The idea is that everyone has opportunities to right. you know, learn these employability skills. Mm-hmm. When you talk about employable skills, these are things like the conflict resolution, teamwork, right. Problem solving. I mean, there's so many nuances that go into taking what they're learning in the class, but applying that outside of the classroom mm-hmm. to be able to not only grow professionally and personally and spiritually too, but to take that in a hands-on way to make it real world and applicable to business. Yes. And so talk about kind of, you know, University of Memphis is a rare opportunity because you're in a top 50 market.
Right.
You have global assets, FedEx, AutoZone, Smith & Nephew, ServiceMaster, International Paper, all these corporate giants, as well as small and medium-sized businesses that all want to be plugged in. Mm-hmm. And talk about that rare chemistry of having the companies engaged and the businesses being involved, but for the students to get off campus mm-hmm. and to learn.
Yeah, there's a lot of literature nowadays that students are reframing how they view college. And there are certainly students that still will always want to go to those major Power Five schools, whether it's in Alabama and Auburn and Ole Miss. And all those schools provide an exceptional education and an exceptional campus life experience. But with the cost of higher education and then how this group of students looks at life, urban institutions are becoming more popular. Specifically because they can have access to employers, whether it's internships or actual jobs, but they can also, if they take advantage of the programs that the institutions have, they can see a pretty definitive career path or a way to get to a career path. So now getting back to Memphis, and what's wonderful about Memphis is about 7 or 8 years ago, my supervisor, along with the Vice President for Student Affairs, asked us to create an advisory board focused on two things. One, newsflash, higher education is not flush with money, right? And so part of the advisory board's purpose was to help us supplement programs so that we could expand and outreach our service to students. But secondly, students began to tell us, we see the value of the education, we see what you're trying to communicate with us in training, but we want to hear from employers about why this is important and how we apply it. And so I merely started sending emails, making phone calls, going to events, and telling employers about our companies or nonprofits about what we were doing with the LEAD program. And what you know about Memphis is, if you're trying to do workforce development or if you're trying to support students within the community, you're going to get a pretty positive response. I don't know that you can be in Chicago and email a CEO and say, would you take some time for lunch to speak to some leadership students about your experience? Or I don't know that you can email an executive director of a nonprofit in Denver and say, would you come and speak to our students? But I know in Memphis, I've done that countless times and gotten the response. And what's wonderful there is a couple things. One, I learned something all along the way when those folks talk about their experiences here. And what we try to do is have students drill down leadership to experiences that these leaders have had and understand the conceptual and the theory and the things that we're doing here. But a lot of times leadership is about experiences and stories coupled into a model that somebody else can use. And so it gives students some current examples of some things that they're hearing with training, they're hearing in class, and then applying them. And you know through your work, even much more extensively than I do, that Memphis has a ton of really good stories that students can learn from and apply and stay in here and embrace and be partnerships with.
Share, you do a lot of work on trends in leadership, different models for leadership. And to your point, you know, there's not a one size fits all. So your goal is to really bring as many of these stories and experiences and models to the students so they can say, okay, that one maybe not so much, but definitely that one's me, and I want to learn more about that and go in that direction. What are maybe one or two big trends, and it could be higher ed or it could just be leadership in general, but what are two that really are exciting to you right now?
It's the career competency stuff. It's the what they're doing is there's a National Association for Career Employers. I think that's the correct name. It's called NACE. And what NACE does is it gives to students and to faculty and professionals what are the career competencies that employers are looking for. Some of the things you said, teamwork, communication. And there's been some recent studies that students think they graduate with a set of skills. But employers are saying, we're not really seeing those skills. And I think two things are happening there from my perspective. First, there may be students that simply aren't engaging in experiences that allow them to develop the career competencies they need. We continue to work with students at the University of Memphis, but I think every institution struggles with this. Students that go to class and go home or go to a job that doesn't necessarily enhance their career profile, they end up getting the degree, but they don't walk away with a profile or a brand that's really valuable to that employer. You have to have more than a degree. The other thing that we're trying to tackle at the University of Memphis is we know that students come away with those competencies because we know those programs have those competencies in them, but students may not be representing that brand or profile adequately to demonstrate to the employer. And so there's publications now that allow you to map the experiences that happen within co-curricular, connect them to the career competencies that employers want. One, have students demonstrate that to employers so they can speak about them, but two, also create a path that they can develop those along. The short story I'll tell you about why I'm so passionate about this is I was in a Chili's about 8 or 9 years ago. I don't normally go to Chili's. My 9-year-old daughter.
My kid loves it too. So especially that they have the video games right there. I mean, that's like the whole thing now is Kaysen loves the video games. So we're at Chili's almost like once a week.
Well, we were at Chili's group for a while. So Kaylee, my daughter, loved those chicken fingers. She's probably rolling her eyes in Fort Collins right now, but I'm talking about chicken fingers and her. But my point was that I saw a recent graduate and he was waiting and he had not identified a job. And it's no way a criticism on that industry. That's not what I'm saying. But I knew that he didn't go to school for that. And so I said to myself, we've got to think about this differently. We've got to demonstrate to students, here are the things you're getting from your experiences, both inside and outside the classroom, and how do you make that part of your profile and know about that, not March of your senior year when you're looking for a job, but throughout your experiences. I think the other thing that's exciting in higher education right now, and I credit Dr. Rebb with this, is higher education is slow to change. And it comes with a history of tradition and education, but we simply have to be more nimble now. I don't want to be cliche, but obviously the internet has created exposure to information, exposure to knowledge that in many ways students can get outside of education, not having to go to class. And so higher education really has to look at how it's communicating value and experience. And so we're really having some substantive conversations about processes and systems and ways of engaging students that better fits what education should be based on the information that's available.
And for those that are outside of the Mid-South, President Rudd is David Rudd, the president, or Dr. David Rudd is the president of the University of Memphis. So that's who Justin was referencing. But talk about, I'm always fascinated because you hit it on the head. Students go to class, and they go to work. They don't necessarily connect all those dots.
Right.
And in many cases, they go to class, they go to work. They're not necessarily volunteering in the community. They're not building the relationships in the community that create a sphere of influence so that when they do graduate, people know them and know that, hey, these are top students that we want to hire in our company. Talk about kind of that side of it is the connection to the community before they graduate and how monumentally important that is, whether it's through volunteerism, activation, service, or just going out and working on projects. I mean, sure. I'm thinking as a marketing student, we always were out doing surveys and things like that, working with businesses. But what it did is it forced the hand of getting to know the community so that people knew you. Share kind of that side of collaboration and why it's so important for these students.
Well, there's a couple things there. I mean, you have to take every opportunity as a student to expand your skill base. And so when you're volunteering for an agency, you're probably learning something you didn't know. And so exposure to knowledge and information just doesn't simply come into the classroom. I think from an employer expectation, an employer is saying to a student nowadays, you have access to resources, you have access to LinkedIn, you have a company website, you have all that information. My expectation is that you use it. No employer is going to accept a candidate that walks into a business or a nonprofit and doesn't know anything about that, because it's really at their fingertips. A couple other things too that those experiences provide. One is that I'm a big podcast listener, and in fact, you know, with age and education, instead of listening to music when I cut the grass, I listen to podcasts, or if I'm working out, I listen to podcasts. And so I was listening to a podcast. There's this woman, Josie Alquist, who does a lot of social media branding for higher education, and she was interviewing a gentleman, Eric Qualman, from Michigan State, and he talked about the importance of a network. And his statement was, develop a network before you need a network, meaning that that time through your freshman, sophomore year, even junior year, I think potential external businesses or whatever relationship it is, they're going to respond to you because they think that your primary purpose and goal is to develop yourself personally, informational interviews, those sort of things. And when you get to your senior year and you haven't developed that network yet, it's more transactional about getting the jobs, and employers are actually able to see through the effort there. And so an employer is going to interact with somebody who's taken that time, their freshman through junior year, they're going to be less likely to interact with that person because, one, they don't know them, and two, they know why. I was also listening to this podcast about the concept of micro courage. And so what micro courage is there are always some things that we're afraid to do or some things that we don't think we can do. And so persistence and courage and those sort of things are progress in areas that you aren't as good as you want to be. Let's take some episodic approaches to that. So there can be some instances in a public sector or volunteering where maybe you're afraid of public speaking, but you get up and you do it, and maybe you didn't do it as well as you thought you wanted to, but you learn from that experience and you develop some sort of base. Mm-hmm. When I started higher education, I was not a solid public speaker. I had the stage fright that we talked about earlier, but I took those experiences and allowed myself to do that. So, you know, it's a pretty safe environment in higher education. There are things that you can do, and maybe outside of exams and papers where you can't make mistakes, but you can be in a safe environment and learn from those experiences. So I just think there's just so many learning opportunities while you're engaged to do that.
Well, I want to go back to something you said about the student. I tell students all the time is you're in a prime opportunity, especially like you said, freshman through junior.
Yeah.
You can really reach out to literally anyone,
right?
Business leader, community leader, nonprofit leader, faith leader, and say, hey, I'm a college student. I want to just grab a cup of coffee. I want to come in and shadow you for a day. I genuinely just want to meet you and learn about your business. And they'll say yes.
They will.
And I think there's something magical about being a college student where business leaders just want to help, and you're non-threatening. You're not looking, you know, there's nothing you're selling. Right. You're genuinely just wanting to learn. And I think that's where you have a prime opportunity to take that ball and run with it. But to your point, once you start getting that senior year where all of a sudden now you're job hunting, it becomes a little bit of a different dynamic. But,
sure. You
know, for those college students that are listening, take that ball and run with it. Go out there and reach out, and you have a chance to really learn so much about your community, but also to build relationships before you need them.
Well, you get information that you may not get from a job description. So you may have an interview with somebody that works at a company that may give you some perspective about culture, or they may give you some perspective about what the company's shifting through in candidates that you can either prepare or answer to. You know, there's information on websites, there's information in job descriptions, there's, you know, what our career services can tell you, but there's some just everyday business and operation information that you're not going to get unless you have a conversation with somebody that's in that particular industry or business.
Switch over to resumes. This is another one. You're known famously for your red pen, you know, with all the markups and everything, but you see a lot of resumes and you help students refine theirs. I'm constantly on my end amazed. I mean, I was just looking at a few even yesterday because we get a lot of people that need help genuinely finding sure. jobs and need help with their resumes. And so we try to help as much as we can on our end. But I'm constantly surprised how many basically just list a few bullet points on what they're doing, but no real stats or numbers on the experiences, their leadership, the real things they've accomplished. And so you take it for granted, once again, that people know how to write a good resume right. on your end. And it goes back to the original conversation on the things they're learning in the classroom, the things they're learning through the leadership programs, the things that they're learning through these volunteer service projects. It's great that they're going through and they're learning them, but then can they parlay that over to the resume mm-hmm. and share that story when they're in an interview? So talk about kind of those things of how do you work with students to pull out the best? How do you work with them to
sure.
be able to articulate the stories of what they're learning in and outside of the classroom in that interview?
So a couple things there. One is that I advise students to do their own personal research. And so there's a lot of ways to go about this. We're about ready to embark on what's called a co-curricular transcript. So students can catalog the experiences that they've had within higher education to then develop the resume content. You know, the challenge is that when it comes to resumes, people will Google Google resume, and then the first thing they see, they think that's the right thing. And Google's not always right, and Google doesn't necessarily always point you to something that's a good guide. So I also tell students to do their own personal research. So take something like a Dropbox or an Evernote, and just write down through journaling or through an experience or through an internship, write down everything that you've ever done that you think might be job related. And then when you go to create that content, it's almost like a personal research paper on yourself. And you can edit and tweak based on what that job description is. It is fascinating to me, even when it comes to mid-level professionals or seasoned professionals, that people don't spend the amount of time in that document to tell people who they are and what their story is. And an average resume, and you know, and this data goes all across the businesses or nonprofits or whatever, but the average resume gets 20-30 second look. And so you really have to spend, if I was somebody that was a candidate, I would look at my resume and the first question I would ask, would I hire me? And I would stopwatch or whatever or something on your iPhone and say, am I really giving a compelling story in that first 20 to 30 seconds? I don't think people spend a lot of time telling what they did versus what they accomplished. And it sounds like you're seeing the same thing when you look at resumes for the positions that you're looking for as well.
Well, and even just the reflective piece of, you know, you go through the process, but do you step back and say, what did I learn
right.
from this? Because that's what they're really looking for. They're looking for growth.
Mm-hmm.
And can you go through something and learn from it? And I think that's something that, you know, whether you do it with a friend, a relative, a mentor, having a mentor to me is really critical because you can bounce these things off of them and sit there and as you're sharing some of these stories, they'll ask you questions
right.
that cause you to think a little bit more deeply to give a better answer.
Yeah, and students come to my office, and I don't have as much time now to the infamous red pen. So I worked primarily with the emerging leaders in their senior year, and part of my role with them was that they would meet with me and we would discuss their resume. And the kind of folklore was that, have you seen Justin and his evil red pen? But my goal was, let's have a conversation that's really a scrutiny of your resume. Would you rather me do it or an employer do it?
And we'll never probably give you feedback, and they'll just toss it to the side.
And won't hire you.
Right.
Right. And so, again, that's another example within higher education where you can get some feedback that's no risk at all. It's just giving you the right information or the most input that you can have to put out the best brand and profile. And so that works just passionate to me. I read articles almost every day about resumes and things that professionals, whether young or seasoned or middle, just need to think about, because I always think, I mean, you've done it here, you're always developing your brand no matter where you are in your career.
Talk about, you hear it often is that the further you progress in your career, the hours become longer. It becomes a 24-hour cycle where you can't separate your personal life from your professional life.
Right.
The problems become bigger and more magnified.
They do.
And more challenging. But yet, that's where the real growth takes place. Mm-hmm. Is all of a sudden now you're taking on more responsibility. You're in charge of a lot more things, but you have the ability to much more greatly impact change and change lives in the process. For the better. Talk about, from your end, the move to Dean of Students and what that's meant for you personally and professionally.
It was a challenge that first year. I think you have an expectation of what the job is, and then you get in there, and it's somewhat what you thought it is, but it's also a lot. It's not a lot as well. So there's a lot of things that a Dean of Students deals with that I didn't deal with within Associate Dean. So conduct's primarily one of them, that we have to address issues and concerns related to the student code. The other thing is just a change in perception and identity. I didn't change when I became the Dean of Students. I was still Justin Lawhead.
But Doctor. Justin Lawhead. Come on, you worked hard for that. We got to fill it in.
You sound like my mother.
Hey, my wife says the same thing. I worked hard for that degree. Like, we're going to put that on as many things as I can find.
Yeah, I agree. Dr. Justin Lawhead. So you, in many ways, you get regarded differently. And so I had to be mindful of people taking my point of view and input, not from really from Justin Lawhead, but from the Dean of Students' point of view. I've had to deal with some staffing changes. When I first got the job, I was also performing my other role, Associate Dean for Leadership and Involvement. And I think you know how much work was involved with that. So creating that
job. That's two full-time jobs.
It really was. And so part of the challenge for me was I really wanted to make some progress on some things that I thought were important as Dean of Students. But I had to really prioritize because just the volume of work with two positions was just a bit to manage. And so I still had to do both throughout that experience. I think the level of knowledge that you have to continue to glean is just significant. And so I spend a fair amount of my time at home just still reading about things like behavioral intervention or Title IX compliance or the changing free speech and some of the things that happened in California. So you just have to be completely mindful and in tune with the higher education climate that's happening across the country that's going to affect your work there. So in some ways, becoming a Dean of Students was going back to school, some knowledge that I had and some knowledge I didn't have. And so I've developed some of my own learning journeys as part of the experience.
What's something that... you're far enough in now where you get to start kind of putting your own stamp, mm-hmm. And creating your own legacy with this. What's maybe one thing that's either a goal or something that you're looking forward to that's one of your ideas?
Well, a couple things. One is institutions now have students come with a variety of experiences from their previous life. So some of them positive and some of them not so positive. So we're looking at almost a caseworker model where if students have an interaction with our office where we've remedied some sort of challenge, are we sure that that challenge isn't still lingering, that we went through the transactional period or time where we addressed that problem, but is that still having some impact on their experiences that we need to be mindful of and guiding them through? This isn't it is in depth in some ways. My effort is to change the impression of the Dean of Students office. So if you polled 10 students and you asked them what was the first thing that came to their mind, Dean of Students, they would say they're in trouble. And I certainly deal with conduct, but I want the Dean of Students to be viewed as a resource. I really want students and parents to know that if there are impediments to the educational experience of a student, that at my office, through relationships and understanding of process and systems and new innovations, we can resolve that. And then finally, we're really having some division-wide, institutional-wide conversation about career development being everybody's business, not just career services. And so I know that I got into the resume business because I wanted to help students, but students will take feedback and input from individuals that have advised them as part of their college experience. So what capacity and what skills can we give individuals that are working with students, not necessarily in a career advising role, in an advising role that would still give them some guidance about how to create that brand and profile that we're talking about? There's a lot of research and literature now about using it an environment format to delivering career guidance that you can get. For instance, there's a program called Iowa Grow that was established at University of Iowa for student employees. So if a student's working at the student union or if they're working at the campus recreation or in residence life, having some conversation with that student about what they're doing and making sure they're performing their job as their student employee job well, but how does that relate to their future? What are those competencies they're getting and pulling that out of a supervisor or supervisee a conversation? And I'm excited to think about how we can do that at the university.
And you can also use that to kind of market the positions as well, as when you take these positions, these are the competencies and this is how it will apply to your growth and development. And these are the certain things that you can put on your resume. So it creates kind of these cornerstone elements that they can use throughout. So that's a smart idea.
We're shifting that we're starting to leadership and involvement and piloting. So any position you apply through leadership and involvement in the fall will have those competencies in there.
Well, all of that does make it easy and it lays it out. And so back to the connecting the dots,
sure. You know,
the easier we can make it to connect the dots, the easier it's going to be to hire the students and plug them right into our community. One of the things that, you know, I always kind of talk about on my end when you talk about just keys to success is one day just kind of in passing, I asked Merv Griffin, you know, what do you think the key to success is? And he laughed, and of all the things he could have said, he quickly said attitude. He's like, it's the one thing you can control, and that's the one thing that will power you and you know, for better or worse,
right.
It will create your opportunities. And so when you look at your career and your growth and even working with students, what's one thing that you think has been a key to your success?
I've worked really, really hard to get where I've done.
Persistence.
So persistence is probably my asset. I don't know that my work-life balance it's probably where it shouldn't be, but it's also got me to where I am at Dean of Students. And now that I've gotten here, now I've attained this position, I'm trying to think about how to create some balance. But persistence has always been an approach I've used to do good work. So that doesn't mean that I necessarily work till 10, 11 o'clock at night, but if somebody happens to email me when I'm home and I have the time, then why not respond to them? I mean, I think that persistence has also led then to relationships, so people could trust me to do the work and get the work done. So a combination of persistence and relationships really, I think, have been beneficial to me.
Well, I know. I tell people all the time, if you want something done, I go directly to you. So, I mean, that's
well,
true.
Thank you.
And that creates, I think, so many opportunities, because if you are the person that people trust, that even though it's going to be some cases after hours or at odd times, the reality is if you're the person that they can trust to get things done, you're going to have more and more opportunities befall you. There's definitely no doubt. Carry that forward a little bit on your end, because when you talk about, you know, I think any person definitely that has sat in front of this microphone, but just in general that's successful, when you talk about work-life balance, they laugh. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you're successful because you work your tail off, and unless you have some huge trust fund that you can just go travel the world and
do
whatever you want. Right, but I'll say none of us do. You work hard, and I think that's the part where people don't see that effort, right? So it's like the musician or the actor or whatever, that you see them in the one film or you see them on stage and they become famous, but you don't see all those years of sacrifice leading up to that moment, the practice, the relationships that they've burned, all of these things, by just putting everything into that basket to be able to make it to where they are today. And so people don't see that hard work, the sacrifice, all of that to get you where they go. They just see, oh, he's Dean of Students. Talk about that, because I think it's really important, not only for students, but just young professionals and professionals in general that don't see how hard it really is to get where you go. Kind of share your side of that in terms of the hard work and what it takes to really get to achieve that success.
Well, I mean, it just was kind of my nature. I mean, I didn't grow up with much, and so part of where we were in that part of Pennsylvania, there just wasn't much to be had. And so I'm not saying that I was always a hardworking teenager, but I also knew that the only resources I had were my own resources. And so I wasn't going to get any trust fund or anything like that. You know, I think what you can tell college students is if you want the future you want, there's going to have to be some level of work that might be different than other people. And I really don't buy into stereotypes or cliches when it comes to college students. But there is some belief that students want things handed to them. I don't really, that's the other thing why I love the University of Memphis. That's just not who our students are, right? They come from backgrounds that hard work and, you know, grit and grind, if you will, is part of who you are. But what we try to do is put students in front of students and say, you know, there are times where I was at the student center at 11:30 at night, or I was doing a project till 2 in the morning for my fraternity and sorority or my student organization, and I thought to myself, why am I doing this? But then I get all the opportunities. So we just had an awards program over the weekend, and or 2 weekends ago, of students that are doing really amazing things, like they're graduating and studying public health or public policy at Georgetown. We get at least once every year a member of our fraternity or sorority that's hired as a national consultant. And that's not common for every institution. And I truly believe why that is one, those students understand and value the experience, but they've also worked very hard within their fraternity and sorority experience. So, you know, we try to put examples of in front of students about here's what hard work gets you. And you don't have to work hard all the time, but what are those times where you can really work hard and improve your value and brand and create a relationship and network that benefits you?
So last two questions, which will be kind of easy ones, and then we'll go into a lightning fun round. One, just give me a proud moment. You know, when you look at the things that you've accomplished already, mm-hmm. It could be a certain moment or just a, you know, something that you've seen, recent, past, whatever. But just what, give us one kind of special moment for you in your life so far.
Well, for whatever reason, maybe it's because I just, humility, compliments to me are a struggle. It's always kind of been who I am, but it's been a particularly growing year for me and a challenging year. But I got 5 separate thank you notes from students unsolicited over the last, and it was seniors. And so it wasn't really the thank yous that really, but it was the impact that they described in there. And so I kept all those thank yous. And as I embark on my second year of Dean of Students, I put those in my desk drawer. And when I have a particular challenging day, I'm going to pull those out. So that was really a recent time where I knew that the work that I was striving to do was helping students. And so I want students to graduate feeling that they've accomplished something, they're ready for work, and they're starting their next part of their career, and that's what students express to me.
Very cool. Yeah, we have a drawer. I mean, I'm sitting there looking at it, but where we keep handwritten thank you notes, yeah. And I tell our team all the time is, if you're having a bad day, open up that drawer, read some of those notes. That's why we do what we do. That's why, sure, we work hard. So the last one is just, how do people reach out? How do they get in touch with you? How do they follow the conversation? What's an easy way?
So a couple things. I mean, you can contact me at the university website, the Dean of Students. I'm also pretty active on social media, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter, and some on Instagram. I don't Snapchat. I've come to a point in my life where I don't get a certain social media platform, so I don't Snapchat that much. But what I love about social media switching real quickly is 2 things. One, I also think from an educator standpoint, there's a lot of challenges with social media when it comes to politics, but there's also there's so much good content out there. So much, whether it's Medium blogs or whether it's people that are on Facebook that are sharing good content. And so I try to share that as much as possible and use that content. And then you can find me on the university website.
So let's do, we don't have any fancy music yet. I keep pushing Andrew to come up with something fancy to insert in here. So lightning round, but these are just short answers. I just kind of rattle off, you know, random things, and it's just a fun chance to get to know you even better. So since you mentioned you like podcasts, give us 1 or 2 of your favorite podcasts.
Freakonomics. Oh my goodness. The hidden science behind everything. And so it really, it's an economist and just some really compelling information about change in our community. things that you can use personally or things you can use in their job. And I just started listening to podcasts at the gym because part of the challenge is that I do work pretty late. So I'll get at the office around 8, and then I'll go home, let the dogs out around 7, and then I'll go to the gym for a while. And so I was missing that opportunity to read, so I've put podcasts in my workout. So Freakonomics is really one of my favorites.
What's a TV show? It could be sports. When you turn on the TV, what do you like to watch?
Well, I'm kind of a news junkie, and so I watch a lot of MSNBC. I watch The Morning Joe, House of Cards, The Americans. Is just a compelling story about U.S.-Russian relations in the 80s. And what's really cool about The Americans is, I don't know if you've ever watched that show, but the show's based in the 80s, and they have captured 80s motif and 80s music. And I actually... A funny story, they were in the parents that are Russian spies. They've infiltrated a suburban community, and they had a pitcher that they were pouring juice for their kids, and I had one of those pitchers in 1984. So they do that show very well, but obviously it's the history of and particularly compelling now considering what American-Russian relations are now. So,
give us a favorite restaurant or place to eat outside of the Mid-South. I kind of know one of them because you told me when I was in Pittsburgh where to go.
You're talking about Permane's. Yeah. Yes, Permane. Pittsburgh has wonderful food. I need to get back up there. Permane's is a restaurant that's been on most food channels. You take a piece of white bread and puts a meat on it, and then French fries and coleslaw.
It just keeps adding.
It's a cholesterol huge nightmare, right. but it's Pittsburgh gluttony at its finest. So, and I had many of those in college, much to my chagrin. But
what do you like to do? I know that work-life balance isn't necessarily there, but what do you like to do to relax?
I love to work out, so I spend a lot of time at the gym, but Choose 901 does so much about things on the weekend, so Memphis festivals, if you're a young professional right now, and I know that the city's done a lot, but if I was a young professional right now, Memphis is just such a great place to live. There's always something going on the weekend, so it's Memphis festivals and really just enjoying the community. And I think you've seen the change in this community since you've been here. And
absolutely.
It's just really a good time to be in Memphis right now, quite honestly. So just merely just enjoying the city itself.
Give us an idea of what type of music do you listen to? Give us some bands or at least genres that are, when you're running, what do you listen to?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say I never left grunge, quite honestly. And
so, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, so Pearl Jam's one of my favorite bands by far. I've seen them, I think, 9 or 10 times. And so you can use Spotify, and they'll do a 90s mix for you. But I really like the Avett Brothers. I saw them in the fall in Olive Branch, I do believe, or whatever that facility is out there. I've gotten into the Revivalists lately. I was supposed to see them on Saturday, but my mother wanted to go on Sunday. And so it's that kind of modern rock. I'm from Pittsburgh, so rock and roll is kind of still where we come from and what we listen to. So I haven't gotten too far away from that.
So what teams do you root for?
Well,
Could be a loaded question.
Yeah, Memphis Tigers for sure. So, it's, this city's passionate about its basketball, and we're going through some transition there. It's hard. Loves the Grizzlies, and then obviously the Pittsburgh route. So it's very fascinating to be in the South. So funny story was that my mother and I were walking through downtown, and she walked up to this woman who was wearing a Steelers shirt, and she goes, "Oh, yay, Steelers!" And the Pittsburgh Penguins were in they're in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and she goes, "I'm going to watch the hockey game," and I'm actually imitating my mother's voice. And the woman kind of blankly stared at her and walked away. And I said, "Well, Mom, there's a ton of Steeler fans in
D'Angelo."
Yeah, right. There's a ton of Steeler fans in Pittsburgh, and they don't necessarily have a relationship with the city of Pittsburgh. They're just Steeler fans. And she goes, "Oh, okay." I was understanding why she wasn't responding to me, but any Pittsburgh.
But
team,
you have University of Memphis ties. I mean, D'Angelo Williams, and there's right. a lot of there's some U of M connections in Pittsburgh too for the Steelers.
There are, and so. And even the current Steeler coach, Mike Tomlin, was a graduate assistant for the Tigers a long, long time ago.
There
so,
you go.
Yep, Pittsburgh sports for sure.
So I know that you said you don't read a lot of books, but give us one book that you've read recently.
I reread Seth Godin books a lot, so something like Tribes and kind of the content that he does there. I do a lot of Audible books. There's a book by a researcher at Florida State called Peak, and it's about peak performance. And so I do listen to books, and it's just what fits to me better, whether it's a walk or at the gym. So Audible is just one of the things that I use frequently.
So what advice would you give for those? It could be those that are going into education, but just in general life advice for people who want to succeed. What advice would you give them?
Get as much knowledge as you can. Take advantage of what's out there and develop your own learning journey that supports your growth as a professional. I think that you can have work and life balance, but I think you always have to go to school in some way. And so the last time I was in school was finishing my dissertation and becoming Dr. Lawhead. But then I create my own learning journeys through social media. And so there's so much. Spend that time, a half an hour in the morning, half an hour at night. Try to get an hour of reading in. I don't read a lot of books. I use Audible to do that. But I do think with the pace of our economy and the availability of information, you're going to have to dedicate some time and a process to glean that knowledge and use it.
Last question is, you're still creating it, but what do you hope that your legacy, especially with the University of Memphis, is? So,
I never thought about my legacy. Well, I think that I came in, saw some things that need to be changed and innovated. And there are programs that will be longstanding there based on the value to the institution. And so I've always taken some pride in leaving institutions and then through either visiting or seeing what they have on the internet, that those programs still are available there. And every institution that I've worked at, there's been at least one program that I implemented there that's still something they use. So obviously if it has longstanding value, then it's working for the institution.
Very cool. Well, Dr. Justin Lawhead, you are a change maker. Greatly appreciate all you're doing, not only here in the Mid-South, but like I said, I mean, you're having a national impact, even international, with the things that you're doing, the programs you're creating. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Thanks for all you do. I appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Changemakers Podcast, produced by City Current and powered by Lipscomb and Pitts Insurance. To learn more about our guests and to share your stories of others leading by example, visit us online at citycurrent.com. Connect with us online using @citycurrent or follow the conversation using the hashtag changemakers. Now, think big, start small, and act now. Be a changemaker.